CEOs, civic leaders, entertainers, and entrepreneurs. They all have something in common: the drive, vision, and heart to achieve success. Steve Klein is a renowned business consultant, author, and host of Playmakers Talk Show. Each week, he introduces you to fascinating personalities who will inspire, educate, and motivate you to persevere and find your own success. And now, here's Steve Klein.
Sophocles said, "Chance never helps those who do not help themselves." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today are two guests who do help themselves. Our first Playmaker served as chair of the Texas Society of CPAs, while our next Playmaker's company has created the first ever platform that uses artificial intelligence for technical hiring needs. With us today is a managing director who has appeared as a featured commentator on all four DFW network TV stations, while our next chief marketing officer has had the honor of representing the U.S. as captain for the national cricket team. These great Playmakers are James Smith, managing director of Smith, Jackson, Boyer, and Bovard CPAs, and Raul Cucretti, co-founder and chief marketing officer of Emroads. And we'll begin today's show with Raul. As chief marketing officer for Emroads, Raul Cucretti oversees the entire marketing and sales effort. Backed by 16 years of experience in various roles in sales and marketing, Raul is responsible for attracting new clients while retaining existing ones. Emroads simplified hiring when they created a platform called Panya, which is the first ever interview platform that uses artificial intelligence for technical hiring needs. Formerly, Raul worked with HP, KPMG, and Nortel Networks, leading organizational strategies, promoting operational effectiveness, and elevating team performances. He was instrumental in building strategic relationships and creating new revenue streams, just as he currently does at Emroads. Raul, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate those kind words.
Glad to have you here. Emroads is unique. Emroads is different. What was the inspiration behind you and your partners putting together Emroads? How did your path lead you to putting that together?
Well, it's been an interesting ride for us. October 19th, we celebrate our 5th year anniversary.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. And within these 5 years, we have shifted our direction 3 times. And we have still survived in such a competitive marketplace.
If you shift directions, you probably made it even better.
Well, that's for you. You know, you to decide or the listeners to decide. But coming back to Emroads, right? We wanted to build a mobile platform. M for mobile, crossroads. Crossroads is where you have traffic coming in from any of the four sides. We wanted to build a mobile platform where traffic could come from any of the sides and, use APIs and build upon it. Unfortunately, we failed in doing so. But along the way, we stumbled upon Panya.
How did you stumble upon it? Because it's a platform.
Yes, absolutely. It's been an interest. As I said, it's been a pretty interesting journey for us. As we were failing to deliver a mobile platform with a set of services, we stumbled upon a few clients. They said, "Help us with our staff augmentation needs. Find us talent in the marketplace for a small startup." Right, that is on its way down. Getting an opportunity to survive was enough for us to jump into the water without realizing anything, you know, how deep the water is, what the marketplace holds for us, being very naive. And once we jumped into the marketplace, once we jumped into the water, that's when we realized how deep the water is, what the challenges are, what the problems are. And that is what led us to build the platform that we have today.
Well, let's talk about what you actually do, because you have 3 different modules, and you help companies basically filter through who they want to hire to get the right hire for, in many cases, a technical position. So talk about, let's say I want to hire a technical person. How would you help me, and what would we do?
So we have a module, specially catered for technical hiring. In that module, on the fly, without understanding the technology, you could create interviews. These interviews are dynamic in nature. These interviews are artificially intelligent. And based on these interviews, you make the next round of screening decisions. So you make sure the candidates that you're interviewing in the next round of the interviews meets the minimum skill set required for you, enabling you to save a lot of time, for you and for your company.
Because we all know that when people put together a resume or many times interview, what they're saying may not be exactly reality. So how do you filter through that? How do you find that out?
Well, that's been a problem, and that problem leads to time to fill or cost per hire matrix increasing in the United States. One of the reasons simply being people misrepresent information, and we do a keyword search on misrepresent piece of information. So now what happens is we start the guessing game, right? If we are able to get the right candidate through the guessing game, in the first round of iteration, okay, that we presented the candidates to the hiring manager, it's great. But with every subsequent iteration, you're spending more time, and time equates to money, and that's what we want to eliminate, right?
How do you develop the questions that you're going to ask this candidate?
So let's break it down into an area, domain where we have understanding and domains where we do not have understanding. So where we have understanding, we have experts within in-house that helps us, come up with the questions. In addition to that, we use social media. For example, we reach out to people that are working in the industries in different roles.
So subject matter experts that know this position.
Exactly. The subject matter expert that know this position in-house as well. As crowdsource.
Mm-hmm. Let's say I'm the candidate. Uh-huh. I'm looking for the job. Right. Now, is this done over the internet?
Yes.
So I could be anywhere.
You could absolutely be
and
anywhere.
The client could be anywhere too.
That's true. And there are two sides to it. One is the client side, and one is the the job seeker side. We offer services where job seeker could come onto our platform and improve his or her skills in a domain where we offer interviews.
So I'm looking for a job. I could come to you, and you're going to make me a better interviewee in terms of how I work with the interviewer.
That's true. And because what we do is we help you transform your educational knowledge into realistic knowledge, and that's the bridge we provide through our platform, so you better prepared for the real world interviews. Absolutely right, Steve.
I know a lot of companies don't hire people because they didn't interview well. Doesn't mean they're not a good candidate, but because they didn't interview well, they didn't hire them. But who's your clients? Who would be best served by using Emroads and Panya?
I think any business that does volume hiring. Right. If you look at Fortune 1000, Fortune 2000, those companies do a lot of volume hiring, and in technology or outside of technology, in sales, marketing, other functions, it does not matter. But Panya offers, as we said, three different module that caters to different skill sets and gives different options for the clients to use it in a different way to reach different business outcomes.
Well, I'm going to ask you about those three platforms in a moment, but I understand there's some key benefits. I saw this on your website, and the website is emroads.com. We're speaking with co-founder and chief marketing officer Raul Cocretti of Emroads, and some of the benefits are reduced cost per hire by 30 to 45%. That's a lot. Reducing new hire turnover by 20 to 30%, reduced time to hire by 25 to 40%. That's amazing. So talk about the three modules you have and how they work based on who the client is and what they need.
So let's say if client is a technology client and want to use our platform for technology hiring, they could either use what we have within our database, create interviews through, few clicks, send out these artificially intelligent interviews, or completely come up with their own question set and input the data into the platform. Right. So the first module is where on the fly, you create interviews and send out to the candidates. The second one is where we provide you a platform and you put into do things as you want, just build interviews as you feel like. Right. The third module that we offer is a live module. Right. And in today's marketplace, you have Skype or you have Google Hangouts, a bidirectional interview. The question would be, why would a client pay for a similar bidirectional interview? Right. We have a lot of features that does not exist in the marketplace today. That makes us very, very unique. For example, right? We empower people to ask questions on the fly to the candidates without understanding their technology. And those questions get auto-evaluated by the platform, letting you know the right or the wrong answer. So you as an interviewee, in this case, right, if recruiters that are your first line of defense were to use this platform, without understanding the technology, you are empowering them to ask questions on the fly so that they can better screen the candidates. If they can better screen the candidates, they will provide the hiring manager with better subset of candidates. And it all gets down to how can you provide the best subset of candidates that will maximize the hiring manager's probability of hiring in least amount of, you know, least number of iterations. And that leads to, you know, your time to fill, your cost per hire. Because in today's marketplace, we use a guesswork, right? That's why, you know, we see our time being very high, you know, in numbers. For example, in the United States, the average number of days to fill a position is about 56 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Almost two months.
Exactly. That's insane, right? Cost per hire to hire one candidate, it's up to $6,500. That's a lot of money to hire one candidate, right? But everything relates to how much time do you spend in hiring, because that determines how much money you're spending overall in hiring the candidate.
Well, essentially, you're identifying who that candidate needs to be. And as I tell people, you know, people talk about looking for a needle in a haystack. It's easy to find that needle when you know what the needle looks like. So you're helping define who that person is. But a question for you is who conducts the interview? Is it the company, one of their people, or is it one of your people?
No, it's a cloud-based solution. And as a company, we provide them a username and password. And
from it's a one-way conversation.
There are two modules that we offer as a one-way conversation.
And then there's one live.
And then where there is one live.
So do you work with recruiting firms to help them?
We do work with the recruiting firms, but, you know, right now we are focusing on enterprise businesses more than recruiting firms as we hit the market.
Well, I understand that Panya has won some awards. What kind of awards has the platform won?
Well, we won an award in Mumbai, India, where we were awarded the best use of technology in HR. We won in Stevie Awards here in California, where it was a People Choice Award. There have been other awards that we have won. We have been nominated for a few awards where we missed out. But overall, right, as we hit the marketplace and as we showcase the solution to our clients, we see that interest in them saying, wow, we didn't see this before. This is, you know, wow, this is something unique. And that's an encouragement for us to just keep on working in the right direction so that, you know, we can make difference.
Well, here's the real question for you. This is the most important question.
Uh-huh.
You are the captain of the national team representing the United States in cricket. How do you find time to practice with all your work with Emeralds?
Well, I have, you know, right now I am not playing. I'm not a current member of the United States team or led them in a tournament.
You're taking sabbatical from cricket.
Well, yeah, I've already taken sabbatical from cricket, right? That was my first innings. And it was a very interesting journey for me because cricket, you know, just like any other sport, has taught me a lot of things that I take it into my workplace.
A lot applies to business.
Yes. Absolutely. You know, how to treat success very modestly, how to handle failures, how to make team work together to a collective outcome, to you know, towards a common goal. And, you know, you have five fingers, you know, and all these five fingers are different, and you have five people that you have to make sure they work towards a common goal. And it's same, you know, what I learned in cricket or any other sports, you know, if you equate it to, you just put it in your work life, and that's what it is.
Cricket only is successful as a sport when the team works together, and you're also helping the teams or companies by finding the right players to play for that company.
That's true.
Very good. So tell everyone one more time, if they want to find out more about Emeralds, and they should, where should they go?
They should visit our website, www.emeralds.com.
Well, Raul, thank you very much for being a participant in Playmakers Talk Show. You are a playmaker.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate those kind words.
Raul Kukreddy is the co-founder and chief marketing officer of Emeralds. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with the managing director of Smith, Jackson, Boyer, and Bovard CPAs. His name is James Smith. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Operation Kindness is the original and largest no-kill animal shelter in North Texas, having saved more than 80,000 cats and dogs over almost 40 years. On a day-to-day basis, Operation Kindness cares for approximately 300 cats and dogs, with another 150 in foster homes. In the past 12 months, more than 4,200 homeless cats and dogs have received medical care, clean shelter, nutritious food, and playtime until they were adopted into a new forever home. Go to OperationKindness.org to adopt or foster a dog or cat. Donate or volunteer. That's OperationKindness.org.
The 31st annual Run for the Children is now the WOKC Spooktacular Sprint for the Children. Run or walk on Saturday, October 22nd at Lone Star Park in Grand Prairie. All proceeds benefit Wipeout Kids Cancer to raise awareness and funding for childhood cancer research and to provide hope and support for children with cancer. Choose from a 1-mile fun run or a 5K course. Cash prizes will be awarded to the top winners in each age category. Join everyone for the on-site post-race party. That's Saturday, October 22nd at Lone Star Park. Go to WOKC.org to register for fun and to wipe out kids cancer.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio with me now is CPA Jim Smith, who serves as Managing Director of Smith, Jackson, Boyer & Bovard, a Dallas-certified public accounting firm. His practice is focused on the entrepreneurial business and its owners. Now, Jim began his career with a major international accounting firm where he served in both the audit and tax divisions. In his 38 years of professional experience, he's performed audit engagements in real estate development and construction, investment partnerships, manufacturing, utilities, healthcare, and transportation. He serves as a primary trusted advisor in all areas of financial management and strategic planning, tax compliance, and tax controversy representation for entrepreneurs and their businesses. Jim has appeared as a featured commentator in all four DFW network news stations, including 3.5 years as a featured business commentator on KXAS-TV5, on the TSCPA-CPA's on-call statewide tax television program, and on various radio news programs. Jim also served as chair of the Texas Society of CPAs for the 2007-08 year, and as a member of its Federal Tax Policy Committee since its inception. Well, Jim, we have a lot to talk about. Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Glad to be here, Steve.
Well, I mentioned 38 years, but you've been in practice for almost 48 years in total. How has accounting and the business climate changed in those almost 48 years?
Steve, it's light years. When I first went to work in accounting, we were literally hand-preparing, filling in blank tax forms, adding up the numbers with a calculator. The first computer I ever worked with was a business machine that had a punch paper tape. It took forever to do anything. We started doing tax returns by computer in the mid-70s.
Those had to be big computers.
Let me put it this way. I had a situation where we had a room that had two IBM computers, a 370, 165, and a 365, 180 or something. Two huge computers, the raised floor, extra air conditioning, rows of hard drives, rows of tape drives. The total computing power in that room with all of that equipment was less than my notebook computer today.
And that was state-of-the-art back then.
Oh, it was. It was the best there was. We had the first personal computer we bought. Was a North Star Horizon.
I remember that.
It had 2 5-and-a-quarter-inch floppy drives, no internal hard drive, 64K of RAM, and the printer was an IBM Selectric typewriter hooked up to an ASCII box, and we paid in 1978 $10,000 for that used. Look at where we are today. But the profession has changed beyond that. Back in those days, we still had hand-posted ledgers. I mean, I remember the big books that had the columnar sheets in them. Everything today is electronic. The nights of going to the post office on April 15th at midnight with a huge stack of tax returns, everything is e-file now. That's all gone. But more important than that is the kind of entrepreneurs we have now. The small business people today are more creative, more dynamic, more open to change than they have been previously in my career. And in our profession, we have to be that nimble and that flexible in dealing with them.
That's a big part of the major change. You're dealing with entrepreneurs. You're dealing with businesses. You are, as I mentioned, you're a trusted advisor. What have you observed as one of the primary reasons why businesses succeed or fail in this business climate?
My belief is there are three primary factors. The first factor when you start a business for yourself, do you understand the business? Did you just get a wild hair and decide I'm going to go do this? You need to have experience working in that field, know something about it. The second thing, for good or bad, do you have enough capital? Businesses that fail sometimes start out on a shoestring. They can't stand the downturn. They can't stand the delays in sales picking up. And the third one is, to me, a little bit the most interesting. Initial success, and then you get hubris and you expand too fast. You cannot hire enough managers. You open new locations. You get out of control. I saw a restaurant chain, and they had a great restaurant doing a land office business. And they opened a second restaurant. It started out okay. Then they opened a third. They opened a third before the second one was totally in the black. And the first one was wound up having to support two, but that wasn't enough. They immediately opened another. All of a sudden, these new restaurants starting out were all undergoing the initial negative cash flow, and the big daddy restaurant could not support it all. And then the economy hit a speed bump, and the whole thing imploded. So, last and most important, control your expansion. Don't get greedy too fast.
In saying that, my thought is if you have a trusted advisor as a CPA, that's the person to talk to before you make these major decisions.
Those clients that we have the opportunity to work the best with actually do call us. We are the ones who need to be able to say the emperor has no clothes, to say you really can't afford this. The scenario you're painting is the best case. Oftentimes, the best case is not what you encounter. What about the worst case? Take a minute and think about it. And oftentimes the decision not made is as important as the decision made.
Well, we talked about some worst case scenarios. You're talking about that. But how do successful businesses then manage the growth they have without going downhill after that?
The first thing is to control the growth. That is to say, you may actually have to put on the brakes sometimes. Next thing is you've got to be willing, and entrepreneurs, in my experience, sometimes have a problem with this. They don't think anybody else can do the job. You've got to be prepared to hire and delegate. Delegating means trusting somebody. It also means letting go. So if an entrepreneur's business is growing, he or she can't do it all. They've got to be willing to hire competence. They've got to be willing to reward competence. They've got to give those people the authority to take some actions. It is very hard for many entrepreneurs to do. They're individualistic people. They're not necessarily managers, and that's a tough step to make.
And many entrepreneurs start the business but can't run it, and they'll bring in somebody. But a lot of people just start a business. There's lots of different legal forms of businesses. How do you help them determine those, and what are those different ways to run a business?
One of the most important decisions somebody starting a business can make is what form. And you've heard people, these people come on advertising, legal will help you incorporate. Well, incorporating is not necessarily the right answer. Fundamentally, you can just start the business as a sole proprietorship. The main reason most people have some form of legal entity is liability protection. So what you've got the LLC, which has become increasingly popular because it's easy. It's the easiest, the cheapest to form. It's the easiest to run. There's less paperwork. And it provides limited liability protection. From a tax standpoint, an LLC, first of all, if it's got one owner or a husband and wife owner, its first default is to file as a sole proprietorship on the person's tax return. But if there's two owners, not married, then you got to go as a partnership or a sub-S corporation or a sub-C corporation. The corporate form over an LLC gives you the opportunity for a little bit more ownership control through stock. Yes, you have units in an LLC, but the ownership of stock in a corporation comes under state law and governs. However, there's some more rigid tax requirements there. So you've got to consider, one, do I need limited liability protection? That leads you to one of those forms. Next, how much flexibility do I need in the ability to run the entity and to allocate profits between more than one owner if there is one, because an LLC or partnership form is easier than a corporate form. And finally, what is my exit strategy for the business? An LLC can be harder to sell than a corporation at the backside, but you can change later, so you're not stuck with that. But that also leads into it. Now, once upon a time, we had a lot of limited partnerships. The limited partnership has been significantly replaced by the LLC because the limited partnership required two entities, the limited partnership and some entity to function as the general absorbing liability. That was more headache, more paperwork, more hassle, more administrative cost. So we're seeing more and more people move into the LLC.
You mentioned succession. What about succession strategies? It sounds like we were talking before the show started, and that's something you're involved with a lot of your clients. How do you help them develop those strategies, as you say, for exiting the business?
It's one of the most important moves a person makes in the maturity of their career. Now, some people will tell you that you need to start thinking about exit strategy the day after you open your doors, but let's face it, most people are too busy trying to get going. I tell clients that consult with me on exit strategy that it takes 5 years of planning to position your company.
I would think that's a minimum.
Well, you can do it in three, but you may leave some money on the table. You need to start thinking about it. I tell them 5 to 7 is preferable. What is your plan? Are you going to sell your company to a third party? Are you going to sell it to employees? Are you going to turn it over to family members? So you have to think about what is my plan to deal with this company when it's time for me to slow down or step aside. If your plan is to sell the company, then you need to start thinking, who's my target market to buy? That may be a vendor that I'm doing business with. It may be a customer who may want to buy me as an integration move. Is it the same size? If the company's pretty much the same size, are you willing to take a note? That company probably can't write a check. If you feel like I really want out and I want a check, then you need to be considering a much larger company. If I'm going to sell to my employees, they're not going to probably be able to pay me cash. I'm going to have to trust them on some kind of a note payout. Do I have competent people in place? And if I do not, then over this planning period, I got to go find them, get them in place. And the thing is, you can make a mistake. So you're going to have enough time to find those people, put them in place, and determine if they can do the job. Lastly, families. I've seen it work, and I've seen it fail miserably. The second generation, or in one case, the third generation, can be a problem. I had one company, two sons, both competent, but daddy had to make a decision which one is going to be the boss. And when he finally decided, the other son was angry, was hurt, and left. I had another situation, two sons. One wasn't interested, but the first son didn't work out well and ultimately resold the company to the second son, and it's still running today. But are your children, do they really want the business? Are they competent? You need to bring them in and give them the opportunity to learn it. And I've seen some fathers not be willing to let go. You bring this.
I'm sure that's difficult. That's one of your babies.
Yeah, that's right. This is my child. You got to quit viewing that person as a child. This person is a business person. This son or daughter is a manager. Yes, you've raised them. Yes, you changed their diapers, but that's past. And some business people have a hard time doing that. So if you're going to do family succession, you got to make that leap. You got to get over that hurdle to say, I'm willing to trust my son or my daughter to come in here and do a good job.
Well, there are lots of things that you work on with your clients. Tell everybody how they get hold of you. Your company is Smith, Jackson, Boyer & Bouvard, but that's a long name for a company. I really like the name of your website. Tell everybody your website.
Oh, the website is DallasCPAs.com, and we stumbled across that name as available some years ago, and I jumped on it, and we've had it ever since. And you can load that into your computer, and it'll take you right to where we are. We're centrally located in Dallas. We've been in the same building for 36 years, and our partner group has a lot of experience.
Well, Jim, thank you very much for being a great guest on Playmakers Talk Show. You definitely are a playmaker.
Thank you.
Jim Smith is Managing Director of Smith, Jackson, Boyer, and Bovard. Our first guest was Raul Cugretti. Raul is co-founder and chief marketing officer of Emroads. This has been a terrific show. It's been great having our guests on the show. Join us also at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join him again next Friday at 3 p.m. for another sit-down with DFW's most interesting Playmakers.